Hello and welcome to Eco Justice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK, and I want to thank you for listening today. This is actually our first episode. We're really excited, and we're actually the most excited to give you the stories from the front line. There are a lot of people out there that are dealing with ecological issues on a local level, on a state level, and sometimes even a national level, and it's really easy to feel powerless in this day and age. And we want to show off some people who are doing their part as citizens and people who care about the environment. You know, we hope to encourage everyone out listening that you too can actually make a difference as long as you just get out there, make your voice heard, and you can get so much done. So, you know, for our first episode, I want to bring with you an interview from Leah Garland, a friend of the show. She's going to be talking with Barbara Barragan Paria from Restore the Delta. But first, we'd like to start with something called Words from the Frontline. Words from the Frontline is a little bit of your time. It's something that we want to give you, the listener, and you, the activist, a chance to really speak about the issue. So with us today, for our first Words from the Frontline, we got Jack Eit from SoCal 350.
This month, California extended its cap-and-trade system until 2030 by approving a largely symbolic climate change measure advanced by Governor Jerry Brown and approved by almost all Democratic and a few Republican senators and assembly members. Instead of limiting CO2 emissions, it allows grave concessions to the oil industry. AB 398 and its related bills tie the hands of local agencies' ability to regulate greenhouse gases, which means more pollution for vulnerable communities, more use of extreme fossil fuels that ravage ecosystems with pipeline spills and oil train explosions, and will put in jeopardy California's ambitious climate goals. The state has the most comprehensive climate change and greenhouse gas reduction program in the world. One element is the cap and trade, which sets emission caps, then authorizes the auctioning, sale, and purchase of emission allowances. Unfortunately, our cap and trade system has failed to achieve its desired goal and should have been fixed through this extension. Under the program, during 2013 to 2015, Communities for a Better Environment found that state officials gave oil refiners approximately 86 million tons of emission allowances free of charge, which oil companies leveraged to build dirty crude production for export out to the world to continue to destabilize the global climate with heat waves, superstorms, and the melting of glaciers. My organization, SoCal 350, joined the coalition of about 65 groups statewide to defeat this proposal and were shown the door by a completely craven process led by climate crusader Jerry Brown. The organization Climate Hawks Vote has evidenced the extension was written word for word by the Western States Petroleum Association, which allowed them to use up $10 to $30 billion worth of free allowances stockpiled over the years in the complicated auctions, and also prohibits local air quality districts from regulating greenhouse gases. Further, it continues to allow offsets where Indonesia might get some trees planted, but Wilmington continues to breathe toxic air. Thus, California will have significant difficulty meeting our 2030 and 2050 climate goals through AB 32 and emission reductions through AB 197. When the bill was heard, Brown, Kevin De Leon, and Anthony Rendon kept making hollow statements about the importance of climate action, damn the details, while Republican members from Orange County like Pat Bates had to make the environmental justice argument. There was an excellent cap-and-trade extension bill, SB 775, that never saw the light of day, that dealt with pollution equity and offsets, as well as allowed for rebates to taxpayers to pay for the higher energy costs. No dice from climate crusader Jerry Brown. We can and should do better, and the environmental justice community is resolved to continue to show up and be a voice for people and the planet, despite the brutal hold big oil has over our political process.
Man, that was great from Jack. Anyway, thank you. And now here's the interview with Barbara Barragan Paria. You're here listening to Eco Justice Radio on 90.7 KPFK.
This is EcoJustice Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. Today we have Barbara Barragán-Parilla. Barbara is the executive director and co-founder of Restore the Delta. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. I'm curious, what is Restore the Delta?
Restore the Delta is a broad-based coalition. We're based out of Stockton, but we are a statewide organization in California. We've grown over 11 years from 70 followers to about 50,000. And we work on water quality and quantity issues for the San Francisco Bay Delta Estuary, largest estuary on the west coast of the Americas. And we want to make sure that it is restored improved environmental health for our children and for generations to come.
How does one increase an organization from, as you say, a few hundred to several thousand?
Over 11 years, we have hit the pavement. We've given talks to hundreds of thousands of people in California. We spearheaded and produced a documentary that was narrated by Ed Begley Jr. It's still available on YouTube, even though it's a little bit dated now.
What's it called?
It's called Over Troubled Waters. We did the film circuit tour with it, picked up a couple awards along the way. We have engaged in government processes throughout the state, and we have worked very hard to critique policies in the state of California regarding water management in the Delta in a way as to earn press attention. And we probably have about 3,000 interactions a year with the media.
You know, I talk about the Delta with people here in LA, and I got to say, 99% of people say, what is the Delta? Can you explain why it's important for people in the Southland to know what the Delta is?
Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, which is part of the San Francisco Bay Delta Estuary, is the largest freshwater estuary on the west coast of the Americas. That's both North and South America. It is an essential source of water supply for people in the greater Los Angeles area. It supports an estuary that supports fisheries from just north of Santa Barbara up through southern Washington.
Wow.
It is the largest stop on the Pacific coast for the Pacific Flyway, for migrating waterfowl that fly from Canada down to Central America every year. It is the largest strip of prime farmland in California, 500,000 acres of just top quality farmland from all that peat soil that flows kind of downstream and ends up in the Delta. It's home to 4 million people. People forget about that. There are five Delta counties. It is the center of infrastructure for moving gas and power from Northern California through the Bay Area and to the southern part of the state. Two railroads pass through the Delta. It is this beautiful blend of a natural place, an industrial place, and home to rural and urban communities.
I'm curious, why is the Delta important to the state as a whole and also to perhaps the nation?
We believe it's a national treasure, especially in terms of what's produced from the fisheries. Sacramento River salmon that flow through that migrate through the Delta are one of the major food sources for South Puget Sound orcas. The Delta is home for the Pacific Northwest's salmon runs. It produces the halibut fishery, the crab fishery. It produces a commercial fishery that's worth billions of dollars every year. There's never been a complete proper cost-benefit analysis done by the state for that alone. The freshwater that moves through the Delta is what keeps the San Francisco Bay alive. So that whole tourist economy, the fisheries that are tied to the bay, they're dependent on the health of the Delta.
How is the health of the Delta?
It's been in decline, and it's been in decline for years because we've taken too much fresh water out of the estuary.
What happens when you take too much fresh water out of the estuary? Does it affect the balance?
So if you take a look, if you go to our website at restorethedelta.org and you look at the map of the estuary, you see how the Delta flows into the San Francisco Bay. Our Delta is one of two inland deltas in the world. If you look at the Mississippi River Delta, you'll see land masses that kind of stick out like fingers into the Gulf. We're the opposite. We're an inverted delta. And so in the interior where we live, it's mostly freshwater, gradually becomes saltier as you head out towards the bay. The problem is we've taken too much of the freshwater out, so we've increased saltwater that's coming back in from the bay, and that has led to environmental degradation for the fisheries. And because we're taking too much freshwater out, we also receive polluted tailpipe water, what we call tail water, from irrigators in the San Joaquin Valley that flows back into the delta. So we're taking the good clean water out, we're putting polluted water in, and then we're having more saltwater intrude from the San Francisco Bay. So it's a recipe for disaster.
Hmm. So I have to ask, knowing that the Delta region is vulnerable right now due to degradation, and knowing that climate change will affect our waters here in California, can you tell me how climate change might affect the water quality or the water levels in the Delta region?
Well, there are two problems with climate change in the San Francisco Bay Delta. First problem is that you're going to have greatly reduced flows of fresh water moving through the delta. USGS estimates that we're going to lose about 38% of runoff into the rivers that feed the delta over the next 40 years. If we have any hope of protecting our fisheries for California and for the Pacific Northwest, that of course support life in the ocean, we're going to need more fresh water moving through the system. So that means that California water management really has to move to a sustainable level and a sustainable model so that we're just not exporting water and taking it out of the delta to use other places.
So you think that by limiting the amount that is being exported, that it could self-regulate and become a healthier water
definitely
body?
We do. And it's not just an opinion. There were water board hearings held in 2010. Consensus was kind of everyone got to consensus, the fishery agencies, the government, independent fish biologists, the environmental NGOs, that you cannot take more than 25% of the fresh water out of the delta and expect it to maintain its health. The problem we have in California is that about two-thirds of the water that gets taken from the delta doesn't come to Southern California. It's diverted along the way for an unsustainable industrial agriculture economy in the San Joaquin Valley.
Can you talk about that more? I don't know that our listeners would necessarily be familiar with that.
So from south of the Delta and south of Tracy down to Bakersfield, there has been growth over the last 30 to 40 years of a new industrial agriculture economy that exports millions of acres of almonds every year to other parts of the world. When that area was put in production 40 years ago, after the Central Valley Project and the State Water Project were completed, people were only supposed to plant crops that were supposed to be fallowed during dry periods, like lettuce, like tomatoes. And when we had the chemical revolution in agriculture,
And that was in the 70s?
It was in the 70s. And also, you know, prior to that chemical revolution, during dry periods, they would fallow their fields. They'd plant something like barley or wheat that didn't require that much water, and did, you know, some drier agricultural practices. After the chemical revolution, they started putting in permanent crops. But yet they didn't have the water supply. So they've planted in California, throughout California now, 1 million acres of almonds.
Yes.
They hit that level last year. And so where they've planted these crops in the San Joaquin Valley, you know, basically from the San Luis Reservoir down to Bakersfield, it's the strip of, it's not the entire valley. The east part of the valley is fine. They have different water sources. It's the strip that runs down the I-5, the west side of the San Joaquin Valley. Those areas, eons ago, were a sea. and the water drained and the soils that left behind were loaded with selenium and boron and bromides and salts. And what has happened is that where they apply water now to irrigate agriculture, it drains back into the groundwater basin and back into the San Joaquin River, and all those pollutants get belched right back into the delta.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have to take a break. And this is EcoJustice Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network.
All the leaves gone, withered away in toxic water. They're drilling down deeper and deeper, wanting liquid ancestors by the leader. But they say, who cares? I'll be rock dies, it's time to get mine. The only greed they see is money. The only water they drink is the vodka from their private distillery. They don't do it for the need, they do it for the greed. They don't do it for the need, they do it for the greed. They don't do it for the need, they do it for the greed. They don't do it for the need, they do it for the greed.
Welcome back to EcoJustice Radio. We're talking with Barbara Berrigan-Paria from Restore the Delta. And I had a question about the Delta Tunnel Project, because I've been hearing a lot about it on the radio, and it seems like the only opposition to the Delta Project are talking about smelt. But I know personally that there are many different reasons to object to the Delta Tunnel Project. First off, can you tell us what is the Delta Tunnel Project and why it's a bad idea?
The Delta Tunnel Project is spearheaded by Governor Jerry Brown, and the idea is to kind of finish off his father's legacy and his legacy from his first term. He wants to build two giant tunnels, 35 miles long each, to divert...
35 miles of
yes.
tunnel.
No. Well, actually, times two, 73 miles worth of tunnels, because there's two
of them.
Four stories each. They could divert half to two-thirds of the Sacramento River before it enters the Delta. That would remove the Delta's primary freshwater supply. He wants to put the water underground and move it for deliveries to the four major water districts: Westlands Water District, Kern County Water Agency, home of Stuart Resnick, Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, and a little stop along the way for Santa Clara Valley Water District up in Silicon Valley.
And why is this a problem? I mean, obviously, it would be a problem for the Delta itself. I mean, since if you're preventing the water to be going into the Delta, and you're saying it's already an area that is vulnerable and that will hurt the economy there. But how will it affect people in the Southland who need fresh water?
This is the problem. With climate change, the water is not going to be there. And the water that is going to be there is going to be diverted first. Remember, I said 70% of the water goes to those agricultural units. It's like the Owens Valley. It's Chinatown all over again.
What does that mean?
That means that ratepayers in Southern California are going to be paying for a project in which they're not going to receive any additional water. The project starts at $17 billion. So Metropolitan Water District has said publicly that they're going to finance half through water sales, but you're not going to receive any additional water. They claim it's for reliability. They tell everyone that the Delta is doomed and it's for reliability. But if people go take a look at our website, we've had some opinion editorial pieces published recently in the Fresno Bee. We have lots of information critiquing that this project does not solve the state's climate change needs or problems with water management. In fact, it's quite the opposite. We need to move to regional self-sufficiency, and we need to create sustainable water projects throughout California that could actually put 6 to 7 million acre feet of water back into the system and create many more jobs than the Delta Tunnels can for less money.
So how is $15 billion not an accurate number for how much it will actually cost us?
Well, it's not an accurate number because, one, it doesn't include the operation and maintenance money. We're looking at what's being proposed by Metropolitan Water District in terms of contingency and analysis. And they've done a very incomplete job. As they plan more for the project, their costs are going to have to go up to mitigate the problems that they find. They're not accounting in their public accounting for the interest paid on the bonds.
Mm-hmm.
That doubles the project right then and there.
And how long are they expecting to be paying this off for?
Well, over 40 years.
And so the interest over 40 years.
It's going to be, I always laugh, Metropolitan Water District tells everyone, oh, we could do that. $5 a month. Everything is $5 a month. Independent economists from the University of the Pacific say it's $200 a year per family over 40 years. That's $9,200. Not everyone in Southern California is wealthy. You have a sizable environmental justice community. Healthcare costs are going up. Energy costs are going up. Housing costs are skyrocketing. People can't get their kids through college, and they're going to cough up another $9,200 per household.
So it's going to be more expensive for people to pay for water.
Yes. And that's just the start. And that's if there are no significant cost overruns. Great comparison on our website. It was published by KCET.
What is your website?
It's www.restorethedelta.org. Great comparison is what happened in Seattle with their Big Dig project. It came in, it was a public-private partnership, which we believe the Delta Tunnels will become.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, a public-private?
That's when government agencies enter into a partnership with private investors. They're called P3s. And if you take a look at what happened in Seattle, the project came in triple the time, double the costs. Everyone ended up suing each other, and taxpayers had to end up paying everything extra for the project. And we believe that Southern California is being set up for the exact same scenario.
Wow. And so and it also would affect water reliability to create these tunnels as well.
Well, Metropolitan is telling people here in Southern California it's going to give them water reliability. But if you sit through all the hearings, as we have for 11 years, they don't know how much water they're going to get.
Suppose water, you say, is going to be going to big agricultural projects
and,
mid-state?
It's still going to be going to those big agricultural projects mid-state. And I think the third important thing is that there are serious problems with the climate change modeling that we've seen in their case.
Please explain.
They are just not properly accounting for a declining watershed in the Delta and in California. And the science...
And a watershed is...
Yeah, well, the watershed are the rivers that feed into the Delta, into the estuary. And the estuary is a system that moves from fresh water to salt water as the rivers meet the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
They are not really using the best available science. They are calling it adaptive management. They're saying they're going to build the project and figure the science out later. Where does it make sense to start mm-hmm. a project at $17 billion and figure out how to operate it later?
Yeah, especially when I imagine you might need money to handle fixing local pipes and creating local infrastructure that's more effective for rain capture, for instance.
In the Delta Tunnels project, for every $1 million spent, will create 4 to 6 jobs. Local sustainability and water projects, stormwater capture, recycling, groundwater cleanup, you get 12 to 20 jobs for every $1 million spent. It's a better value.
Oh, so you're saying it's more efficient for the California economy to be working with local water.
And the environment, because you can actually capture and create new water.
Great. How can people learn more about the Delta and about Restore the Delta?
You know, we are prolific. You could go to our website. You could sign up for our email
list.
I know
that website one more time.
Is restorethedelta.org. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. Once you start hearing from us, sometimes you may say, oh, I only want to hear from you once a week. There's an option for that as well, because we are prolific, because this is our life. We are the organization that is really engaged and at the center of the fight.
You've been doing it for 11 years.
11 years. We are at ground zero. And the one thing I have to stress to people throughout California, when we started 11 years ago, it was about defending our home. My heart aches and breaks every day because the wrong decisions are being made, and I really fear for the water security of the entire state.
Well, Barbara, I think we're going to end on that. Thank you so much for coming in. This was Barbara Barragan-Paria, and you're listening to Eco Justice Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network.
Thank you for tuning into Eco Justice Radio here on 90.7 KPFK. That is it for our show. I want to thank our executive producer, Mark Morris, interviewer, Leah Garland. I also want to thank Barbara Barragan-Paria. And I also want to thank SoCal350 for giving us the resources and the time that we needed to help do this. And of course, KPFK. You'll be hearing more from us in the future. So thank you and have a nice day. And remember, the power is yours.